Wide Party Line. Hi.
What's going on?
Nothing much. Sit here reading Deathly Hallows.
Again?
You know, I never did finish last week, so I just went on ahead and I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and finish it up. So, yeah.
That's what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. Hanako is reading Deathly Hallows after the movie. Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat. We're getting right into it with Hanako.
Hey.
Harry Potter.
Yes.
So.
Honestly, I haven't even sat down and done a review yet because I'm still trying to process everything that the movie was. But, I mean, I was impressed. I loved it. I loved it. There was very few things that I could find wrong with this one.
You know what? I'm going to have to agree. I thought that this felt like a Harry Potter movie. This felt like what I've been wanting since... Order of the Phoenix was pretty good. So, but the movies between Order and the Phoenix and now I just was not into. But this, I mean, we had so many battles. It's like, oh, wow, another battle? I was almost getting battle fatigue. I didn't quite get there, but...
Yeah, it was... I think they really did a great job of wrapping the whole thing up. They did. You know, within the constraints of film. I mean, they kept it. It was just over 2 hours. But I really think that they did get a lot accomplished with that 2 hours. And I'm also glad that they did split the final film into two, because there's no way they could have done all of this with just one film.
Yeah.
It would have been impossible.
I think the final three books should have been split into two, honestly.
I think so, too. But, you know,
they could have, you know, it would have lasted a little bit longer, gave people a little bit more time to be Harry Potter fans, because now it's all over.
Well,
how do you feel, Hanako?
You know, it's kind of weird in that sense, because it's like, okay, there are no, you know, now as far as that type of thing goes, it really is over. You know, we, you know, my group at Len HP, we got to the theater early on Thursday. You know, everybody, you know, not everybody, but most people were dressed in costume or they had on, you know, Potter shirts. And we just basically, we played games. We participated in trivia. We took pictures. I mean, we basically made it like a big party. And it's like, you know, it kind of hits you that night that, okay, this is the last time we'll be able to do this. It was kind of the same with the last book release. It was like, we won't have these anymore.
I think it's very unfortunate that, you know, when writers just put on the brakes so hard that they won't be flexible to write something else. I think there's another story here. I don't know what the hell it would be, but I don't know. I just think...
I mean, there's so many things she could do with this universe. I mean, she has so many characters that we would all love to find out. Like, she could write a book about every single character and I would not be mad. Seriously. I wouldn't, because all of her characters, it's not like she really has any boring characters. All of her characters, you know, have different layers to them. I mean, you think somebody as simple as Arabella Fig, you know, who the Dursleys used to just put Harry off on when they wanted to go do something and not keep him. You know, you think somebody like her is just there as filler, then turns out to find, you know, then you find out in Order of the Phoenix, okay, she's actually a squib and she's been watching over Harry all of these years. And it's just, you know, different little things that she threw into these characters to make them more than just one-dimensional. You know, it's like she has so much material she could work with her characters. So
I don't know.
I don't think she's done. Maybe with Harry Potter's story she's finished. But I don't know. I think there's way too much to explore with other characters, other universes, you know, that I'd be able to, you know, I could see her doing something else. I don't know if she would, but I won't say, you know, I don't think this is the end of it.
Oh, she could jump like 50 years into the future. We don't have to have Harry Potter because, you know, yeah, we're done with that story. So,
yeah.
I mean, what I don't really necessarily want to hear about his kids either. You know, like maybe jump further than that after they've gone and died or whatever. And hear something like that. But it was a very, very good end to it. You know, I went with a few friends. We actually got to drink some butter beer. It was just, it was a lot of fun because the theater we went to, they had it for sale. They made something. It was like apple cider mixed with butterscotch with whipped cream on the top. So
I've never heard the apple cider part, but I may have to try that one.
Yeah, it was a little weird because it was like, well, we expected this to be a little bit more buttery, but hey, it's beer, whatever.
Okay, so here's the question. At what point did you start crying in the movie? Or did you cry?
I didn't cry at all. I teared up at something
all?
And I forgot. I forgot what I teared up at. Like, I was just like, got choked up a little bit, but I didn't shed one tear, and not one.
Oh, my goodness. Our whole theater, it was so funny because it's like everybody clapped at the same time. Everybody made the same exclamations at the same time. And all throughout the theater, you hear you hear people blowing their nose.
I actually cried more in the first part than I did in this one. And,
really?
I was at Alamo Draft House, and they are, like, really strict about making any noises in the theater. They will clown you about it. So everybody was a little afraid to interact. Because they're a little on blast. Yeah, they mean it.
I can kind of understand, you know, the noise, but it's like going to see this particular film. I had to go opening night, and I had to go with the group that I went with because I've heard other people who went to, like, say the next day, Friday or Saturday, or they went. You know, they went to theaters where, of course, there's not really a large Potter contingent. And one of my girlfriends, she told me, she said, you know, when, I forgot what part, I think it was when Ron and Hermione kissed or when Neville showed up, she started clapping in the theater. She said she was the only person who didn't. She looked around like, oh, come on, people, really? She was like, oh, she said I had to have been in the theater with the most boringest group. And I was like, yeah, I can't do a Potter movie like that. I mean, most big movies, I just know. I have to go with a group of diehard fans because I know, okay, I knew the moment that the WB symbol showed up on the screen, I was going to tear up. And I had a girlfriend from school with me. I call her my cousin, but she was with me, and I was like, don't laugh at me because I know I'm going to start tearing up after this. And then my friend Ashley was sitting next to me, and she started doing the same thing. She just rubbed my arm. She was like, we are going to get through this. So,
you know,
it's fun to be able to do that with people who understand you. It's like nobody looked at me crazy when I started crying. Nobody looked at me crazy when I started cheering or, you know, I made little noises or, you know, little gestures, just, you know, trying to contain my excitement, but at the same time, it was like, oh my God, they put this in the movie. Yes, they put this in the movie. I mean,
well, I had a friend that we kept heckling back and forth, so we whispered in each other's ear, like the part where Dumbledore met Harry in the White Room. I was like, oh my God, this is like Matrix 3. Or, you know, I would whisper to him, you shall not pass, because he looked like kind of Gandalf from Lord of the Rings. But I mean, we'd have our little back and forth, but nobody clapped. I mean, there was laughter when there were funny stuff, so people did laugh, but there was no applause at the end, and there was nothing. So either these people were not really fans or they'd seen it already, you know. And I mean, I was good. The experience was nice. I wanted to see it in 3D, but maybe I'll see that in 3D later. Did you see it in 3D?
No, not yet, but I am planning. My son wants to go see it in 3D, and he went earlier this weekend. Their dad took them to go see it again. So the girls went with me on Thursday night. My son didn't want to see it Thursday night because he said, one, it's going to be too late. I'm going to fall asleep. And I really, really want to see it in 3D. So at some point within the next couple of weeks, I will be making the hour-long trek to the Mall of Georgia and going to see it on the big IMAX screen because that's the only way I want to see it.
IMAX and 3D? Boy, you better bring some Tylenol, girl.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what were the parts that you were crying on?
There were quite a few. I would say the most, I guess the one that sticks out mostly in my mind, the Prince's Tale, Snape's backstory.
Like
you couldn't help. I mean, Alan, you know, and it's been, you know, talked about on different fan sites, different reviews, and, you know, just different things. Alan Rickman needs to get nominated for something for his performance as Snape in this movie.
And the whole thing, yeah.
He was incredible. It's like throughout all the first seven movies, all you see of Snape is this cold, calculating, unfeeling character.
And I thought he was kind of... I always liked him.
But it's kind of like you always look at how he treats Harry and how he is with other students, like, you know, Neville and Hermione, and he's just this kind of, you know, unyielding character almost. It's kind of like he has to play this part to seem like he's so detached, and he's just this, you know, this cold person. And then you see the way he was about Lily Potter and the way, you know, him discovering her body and holding her while, you know, when she's, that broke me. I was not, just to see the emotion on his face when, you know, he talked to Dumbledore and found out that she had died. It was very moving. You are so silly. She was supposed to do that in the movie. But no, it was really great. And I mean, just other scenes, seeing the Weasley surround Fred's body in the Great Hall.
I was upset. And that was too fast. I thought that maybe they would, I wanted to see, you know, how he died, how they died, all of, you know, that they were holding hands at one point and then boom, dead. Yes, it was like that in a book, but it just, that has always upset me about that book, about...
You mean about Remus and Tonks?
Remus, Tonks, and Fred, you know, they just kind of died off screen, and that's it. And so we get to bond with these characters. We don't get to see how they die, we just see them dead. Now, there was, I think I did cheer when Miss Weasley got her revenge.
Oh, yes. I think the whole theater erupted then, and just the way that Bella kind of exploded was just, it was spectacular. It wasn't what I was expecting, but it was, everybody was like, okay, we weren't expecting that, but it was great.
She exploded like a vampire from True Blood.
Yes, she did. No, and the funny thing is, when Voldemort came to pieces at the end, I made this joke, and my girlfriend laughed at me, and I was like, okay, is John Coffey around somewhere? Because it's kind of like, you know, in the Green Mile, when John Coffey is letting out all that stuff, it's just like dissolving in the air, and that's what Voldemort did. So I thought it was really funny how they destroyed those two, but I guess they had to do it kind of differently, because I think there was a little more force in those deaths than in any of the others. You know, you have your killing curse, you know, hit at Cedric and he just kind of falls, and Bellatrix hits Sirius and he falls behind the veil. But it's like, those were just kind of haphazard spells. Like, okay, yeah, I'm going to try to kill you, and if I hit you, I hit you, and if I don't, I don't. But it's like, Molly went after Bellatrix with a purpose. You know, she had already lost one child. She was not about to lose another. She's just finally like, okay, you know what? I'm tired of this bitch. It's time to put her, you know, it's time to get rid of her. And the same with Harry and Voldemort. I think, you know, it's just basically a culmination of, for Harry, just 17 years of, okay, this has really, you know, ruled over my life. It's time to get rid of it. It's time to go.
It was time to go. And I mean, after I came back, what I was saying in the drive back home, I was like, so what we have here is a grown-ass man who came back from the dead and harassed a kid for his whole childhood. For what?
Basically.
For what?
Basically. To you know, because he misheard a prophecy, you know, that said that, oh, you know, this person may have, you know, the power to vanquish him. And he didn't even interpret that, you know, correctly. But it's funny going back through and rereading Deathly Hallows. It's just kind of like, of course, you see a little bit more detail about how Voldemort's arrogance really is what contributed to his downfall. Because even the parts that I'm reading now, like the part that I'm reading now, I'm actually reading the Princess Tale chapter. So I just got finished with, you know, everything at the beginning of the battle. And it's like when Harry is in Voldemort's head and Voldemort is figuring out that they know about the Horcruxes. Even in his mind, he's like, well, how could he know about this Horcrux? You know, not even Dumbledore knew. And, you know, I never told anybody. How could this little boy figure this out? And I mean, even as he's going and he's finding out that his Horcruxes are missing or destroyed, he's still in his mind, well, how did he figure this out? Oh, he can't find the diadem because I'm the only person who was clever enough to figure out the Chamber of Secrets, and I'm the only person who's clever enough to figure out, you know, the room where I hid it. And it's like, okay, don't you remember Harry destroyed your, well, he probably didn't know this by that point, but, you know, it's like, okay, Harry destroyed your diary in the Chamber of Secrets, so if he could find that place, obviously that means he could find something else. You know, and it's just like, it's his arrogance from day one is what has led to his downfall. He, you know, he went in to kill Lily and James thinking, okay, I'm just going to kill them and kill this baby and get them out of the way, and I won't have any threat. And he just totally underestimated everything. You know, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, if you had come off your high horse a little bit, you'd still be around to wreak some havoc. But no, you had to think you were the greatest, and then you know, you get defeated by a 17-year-old who, by his own admission, is not a great wizard. He does most of what he does with help. And that was probably one of Harry's greatest strengths, because he relied on other people, whereas Voldemort didn't rely on anybody. Mm-hmm. He didn't trust anybody enough. You know,
wow. So it's such a great story.
It is, and I'm so sad it's at an end, but, you know, the stories may be at an end, the movies may be at an end, but, you know, the fandom, I think, will stay strong.
Well, if Star Trek is still going on, then, Harry Potter still stays strong.
Yeah, I think Harry Potter is going to be around. And then the good thing about Harry Potter is, you know, it started out as books, so it's something that generations will be reintroduced to, you know, as they, you know, as more kids, you know, grow up and get to reading age and, you know, start hearing about it, you know, they'll start picking it up, and it'll kind of recycle itself. You know, my son now is 9 and he's just starting to read the first book, you know, and he really started wanting to read it, one, because he watches the movies and he knows that there's stuff that there's not, you know, that's not in the movies, that's in the books.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm one of those types of parents. This is how I got my girls to start reading. They hated reading. And whenever they would ask me something about the series, I would say, well, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to get brave and read the books, you know, tackle the books. I know they look big, but, you know, they will tell you everything about the story you want to know. And that was how they got started. And now, you know, he's been discussing stuff at school with his friends, and his friends are telling him stuff. And he's like, I don't know about that. I haven't read the books. And so now he's like, okay, mommy, somebody Saturday night spoiled him. He came to me Sunday morning. He said, mommy, I got spoiled last night. I said, what do you mean you got spoiled? He said, the little boy that was over here, he told me that Harry is a Horcrux, and I didn't know that. I said, oh, yeah. I said, well, he went to go see the movie already. He probably thought you had to. And Mike said, okay, I guess I don't have to wait to go see the movie in 3D. I'll go see it now, but I guess I need to start reading Sorcerer's Stone, huh? I said, well, that might be a good thing for you to do. So now he started it. So.
Okay, so I looked back, and our first episode together was in May of 2009. So you and I have been going back and forth for about 2 years
now.
Like,
wow.
This. So you've gone through, you know, you've always blogged it. You've always had the fandom. You've always, you know, collected tons of things and blogged for other companies and just been, you know, a big champion for Harry Potter. What's
mm-hmm.
next? What is next?
You know, I don't know. Harry will always be a big part of my life, not just because it's a great story, but, you know, I've had so many great experiences dealing with this fandom, and I've met so many really, really good friends who have become, like, my lifelines in, you know, in everyday life. So Harry will always be a big part of my life. I'll probably still keep doing stuff. I'm still going to go to conventions. I'm still going to do fan meetups, still blog about it. And then, you know, we've got Pottermore coming up, and I'm just kind of excited to see where that's going to, you know, to what levels that's going to take this fandom. You know, we're going to get new material, you know, not necessarily books, but, you know, we'll get to find out more stuff about the characters that we've grown to love. So, you know, other than that, I'm just going to keep seeing what's out there. I mean, Harry Potter opened the doors for a lot of authors to, you know, just basically expand their stories. And it's, you know, it's given people something to strive for as far as, you know, the imagination that has to go into these stories and that has inspired, you know, different role plays, costuming groups. I mean, it's just, it's been really great. And I'm just, you know, I'm just waiting to see what comes next.
That's cool. What is going on with Pottermore? Has she released anything else or any more information?
Not that I know of. My computer has been down for a couple of days. I have to go get a new adapter cord, so I haven't been able to be online like I usually am.
Oh, okay.
But I do know that she's done a couple of screenshots to show us kind of what it's going to look like once it's there. And I think the week after next, the 31st is when they will, I guess, reveal the first million people who will be able to take part in the beta version of Pottermore.
Right.
So I'm hoping I'm one of those million people.
Me too, because I put my email address in there too, because I'm curious. But
I just want to play. It's like, it's Potter, and for right now, you know, if that starts July 31st, school doesn't start for me until August 22nd, and of course I'm unemployed now, so I have time to actually sit and be a fangirl for a couple of weeks, you know.
Well, how about getting that Harry Potter review up on hmrpotter.com, Miss Fang?
I am. What I actually was going to do, I thought I was going to try to go back and see the movie at least one more time,
right,
before I put up a review, because the first time that I saw it, of course, I'm going in as a fan and not thinking in a business sense. So I'm going in and I know I'm going to be emotional, and I know it's going to be like, you know, a huge, huge thing for me. And I know that there are some things that I missed, you know, amidst all the, you know, the cheering, the clapping, the crying and stuff, like when Ron was chasing after Blaze the Beanie and Gregory Goyle in the Room of Requirement after they shot a killing curse at Hermione. I missed the whole line when he ran at them screaming, talking about, "That's my girlfriend!" I'm like, how did I miss that? This is wrong. Yes, it was hilarious, but, you know, I want to go back and get a fresh look at it before I actually put up a review, because other than that, I'm going to see something that I wrote and be like, oh, wait a minute, that's not right, and go back and change it. So I think I'm going to get one more view in and then go ahead and write a review.
That's cool. So I wonder when we're going to get the remake. Ready for the remake. Ready for them to start all over. Because, you know, they're not going to do that ever, but they remake Clash of the Titans, so there's hope.
Yeah,
for
but
Potter.
You know what? I think because of the fact that, one, it took so much for them to even get the film rights to do this story, because J.K. Rowling was so protective of it, I really think that Warner Brothers will hold on to this as it is for a while. I mean, they worked very closely with her, you know, to ensure that this story was going to be told properly, that nothing was going to be changed. And, you know, right now it's been very successful for them. So I think if they were to try to do it quickly like they're doing with all these other reboots, I mean, you got another, you know, the new Batman trilogy that came out, you know, when they just did the Michael Keaton version, mm-hmm. what, 20 years ago. You know, I think right now if they try to reboot the Harry Potter series, even 10, 20 years down the line, you still got the people who are now, you know, the big Harry Potter fans. And we see these people, these actors, as these characters. And I think if you were to try to redo that too soon, it's going to backfire on them, because I'm sorry, in this lifetime, you will not tell me that you can find somebody who can be Severus Snape better than Alan Rickman, you know, or who can, for me, be Harry Potter better than Daniel Radcliffe, you know.
He is for Harry Potter.
You know, I think of Ron Weasley and I see nothing but Rupert Grint. So, and I know there are some people who, you know, who kind of differ on various characters, but there are some characters in this series that no matter what you do, you just can't replace them. So I think for them to try to reboot it 10, 20, even 30 years down the line, I think that will be too soon.
Yeah.
So let's hope that it, you know, they keep it the way it is. It's great the way it is. Now, if they were to go back later and do it, I would just say I would hope that they would find a way to incorporate more of the canon, more of the books than they did in some of the earlier movies, especially like Prisoner of Azkaban is one of my favorites to watch, but it's also one of the ones I hate the most because I feel like they left out so much.
Right.
You know, story-wise, especially with the Marauders backstory and, you know, just kind of giving Harry, you know, kind of a link to his past that's a little bit more grounded than what we got in the film.
Well, what I would like to see is them to make Voldemort more ambiguous and less boogeyman. I wanted, because in the books, he was kind of ambiguous. He was, I want people to feel conflicted about him dying, not just, okay, he's evil, screw it. You know, I wanted it to feel more diverse and realistic, you know?
Yeah, I think they need to show more of Voldemort's intelligence. And I think that's one thing that I can say that they kind of didn't do with the films, because it's like, okay, you know that Voldemort is this supposed scary, you know, most feared dark wizard, but I don't think they really explained to us why. Like, you have to have some kind of smart to make the Horcruxes and to do the kind of things that you know, the kind of evil that you did. And just, you know, reading about it in the books, the steps that he took and the methods to his thinking as far as how he made the Horcruxes and why and how each death was significant to making that particular Horcrux. It's like you don't get that in the movies. You just get it as Voldemort being a power-hungry, you know, oh, I need to rule everything type of wizard, and I'm going to do this by killing everybody. And it really wasn't about that. He really thought that he was one of the most brilliant minds in the wizarding world.
And he kind of was, but I think it was an extremely big mistake for them to not include his backstory with his mother. I mean, it feels like an empty exercise without that, the whole movie, which is why, like, I really want to see a remake, and I really want to see somebody who's sympathetic towards Voldemort, not to the point where he's a hero, but to the point to where, you know, people will think and be just a tiny bit conflicted about his death at the end there.
I agree.
I don't know, but I gotta say it was a glorious film. They did it right. I mean, I read the book only once, but I was like, well, they covered everything.
Yeah, I think they did. They really did. Like I said, the very few things that I think they didn't cover, they weren't so major as to where I could say, okay, the movie would have been better had they included this. I mean, even the small things that they changed with, you know, Snape dying in the boathouse instead of the shrieking shack and just little things like that, I don't think it took away from the film.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they showed, you know, that they gave us a glimpse of the trio, you know, a few days afterwards to show, you know, them kind of reconnecting and just kind of, you know, being with each other saying, oh, my God, this is all over. You know, because we didn't get that in the book. It's like we saw Harry disappear into the Gryffindor Tower, and that was pretty much it until you know, the epilogue. So,
and Snape's death was brutal.
Oh,
it was so brutal. Even though they didn't show anything,
it was just to see him hitting that wall, and
that was gross.
It was a lot harder than I thought it would be. I did not. I was kind of expecting, you know, okay, Snape is going to die, da da da. But yeah, for him to die the way that he did, it was quite horrible.
Yeah, it was.
It was quite horrible.
I'm so glad Harry got to see exactly what was going on. So
yeah,
that was cool. But yeah, Harry Potter's at an end. We'll see Hanako blog after she's seen the movie again in IMAX 3D.
Yeah, I may not wait. I may not do the IMAX 3D and blog. I may go ahead and just see it somewhere else, you know, just regular, and then turn around and do the 3D. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, we are going to end this one unless you have any more Potter updates.
No, I think that's it. I mean, they closed the series out beautifully. What can I say? They did a great job.
Okay, folks, if you have any Harry Potter related questions, give us a call at 773-336-2686 or go to our website, leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com, send us a tweet at scifipartyline, message us on facebook.com/scifipartyline. Thank you for listening to the show. We hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
End of line.